Well, folks, from the sound of those glorious notes we've come to know all so well, it's time for the event that the great Jim Nance has tabbed, a tradition unlike any other. Indeed, it's time for the Masters. Hello, lovers of golf everywhere, and welcome to a special edition of Musings on Golf as we look ahead to the first major championship of 2024. My name is Kelly Elbin, and along with my pal Bob Bupka, we'll help you get ready for the big week at Augusta National Golf Club, and we'll hear from Augusta native Larry Mize, whose chip-in 1987 has to rank among the all-time great shots in golf history. Robert, you all set for another great Masters?
I'll tell you this much, Kelly Elbin. If you're in the golf business and you don't get excited when it's Masters week, get out of the business, because it doesn't get any better than this. This place is a cathedral. The community is just so fully engulfed in this event. It's a tradition. You know, that it sounds corny, but a tradition like no other, that's exactly what it is. There is no tradition like this. It's almost like all the plants and flowers and azaleas are brought in on Wednesday night, and then Thursday, when you tee off, they're in full bloom. And the other strange thing that people have a hard time getting used to when they attend their first Masters, Kelly, you out there on Tuesday and Wednesday, it could be 70, 75,000 patrons on the grounds watching the practice rounds. You show up on Thursday, you almost get the feeling that the tournament has been canceled because there's only 25,000 patron badges for the actual competition. So yeah. I know of no other sport where there are far less people for the actual competition than there are for the practice rounds.
It is an event conducted by Augusta National Golf Club, and they run it exactly how they want to. Bob, you've covered more than 25 Masters. What I've always found interesting, and I'd like you to speak to it, is the place, particularly golf course, it continues to evolve. This has never been a static situation at Augusta National. And a little tweak this year, for example, the second hole, the tee there has been moved back and slightly to the left, about 10 yards. They're trying to bring the bunker in the fairway, the right side of the fairway, into play more, because the last 3 years, the second hole there has played as the easiest hole in the golf course. They are always refining, and I think that's what makes the 4 days of the event even more special. They always care to make it as great a test as possible.
Well, let me back up what you just said, Kelly, because Tiger Woods, and we're going to hear from him in a couple of minutes, but in his press conference, he was asked, can anybody shoot 59 at Augusta National? Tiger's response was, when I started, yes, it was possible. Nowadays, impossible. So that backs up your comment about how much it's changed. You know, it's subtle changes, but they're all significant, and it's a much harder, longer golf course than it was 25 years ago.
Yeah, and they've made some subtle changes on the front nine, as we saw from the Augusta National Women's Amateur. The two par threes, number four and number six, they've made some minor changes there. In the case of number four, which is a great par three, the right side of that green's been softened a bit. Shots were ricocheting away from the pin a little bit, and they're trying to reward better shots. The same on six with the back left. They've softened that area. So it seems, Bob, once the Masters ends 1 year, the powers that be at Augusta National start looking at how do we make it even better for the players. Certainly, Bob, from a patron, we have to use that term this week, from a patron standpoint, people don't mind standing in line for a long time for the concession stand or for the merchandise shop, because that's the only place you can buy the items that are logoed with the Masters logo. They don't mind the concessions because you get right through, and then you pay $1.50 for a pimento cheese sandwich. It's just such a unique place, isn't it?
Yeah, there's no other event that sells more merchandise. I mean, I think they did an average once, and and it come out to about $750 a patron spent in the merchandise because a merchandise facility. And the reason is when you're back home, you're at your golf course and you tell your friends, I'm going to Masters. Hey, could you get me a shirt? Could you get me a hat? Could you get me this, a towel, a pin marker? You know, so everybody wants to oblige their friends. So you see them walking around. It looks like they just came out of Walmart. They have so much in their hands. But it's quality merchandise. It's all at a fair price, and it's precious.
$70 million worth of sales is what was estimated that they sold last year in a week. in the main merchandise area, and they've added another one this year. So, Bob, as I mentioned, you've been there for more than a quarter century, but two new participants this year who we saw in a playoff at the Valero Texas Open. And what a roller coaster crazy ride that was for Akshay Bhatia, winning for the second time on tour, but really the first time that qualified him for the Masters. So he gets in this week. And Denny McCarthy making seven straight birdies to close out his back nine on Sunday, and then unfortunately hitting a poor third shot, a really bad shot on in the sudden death hole. He had already qualified based on his play last year, so they round out the Akshay rounds out the field of 88. But what a strange situation. And then the guy gets hurt, Bob, with a fist pump on 18 and needs medical attention. And the sudden death hole, that was truly a first for me. That one I'd never seen before.
I've never seen that either. I mean, a player getting taped up before he hits a shot into the green. You know, that's why you love watching PGA Tour golf, because if you think you've seen it all, brother, you haven't seen anything. I mean, there's always something that's going to happen that leaves you shaking your head. It's probably one of the key elements which makes the sport of golf the great sport and the sport of a lifetime that it really is.
Denny McCarthy still searching for that first PGA Tour win. Akshay had a four-shot lead going into the final round, and you know was able to match an incredible birdie by McCarthy on the final hole of regulation, and then prevail in sudden death. And let's hear what it meant to him to know he was going to go to the Masters.
Yeah, I mean, Denny played unbelievable. You know, coming off nine, had a great up and down six-shot lead, nine holes play. You're like, okay, let's see how big this lead can get. And then, you know, he makes a 20-footer from off the green, a three-putt from off the green. Birdie the next, he pars. So now, okay, we're back to five. And then, you know, from there, it was just unbelievable how good he hit it. The putts he made, I mean, that guy has some guts, and, you know, he's going to win a lot of times out here. But I did tell him, you know, in scoring, I was like, hey, man, like, you're in Augusta already. Like, come on, just let me, you know, let me go. But no, for real, it was awesome what Denny did. And that's kind of is a really good feeling, kind of making that putt on 18 in regulation when he made. And, you know, just fortunate to hit a couple good shots on 18 in the playoff and get it done.
Bob, what a rising star this kid is. By the way, he unusual situation in that he did not go to college. You know, he's an American player who decided to make the jump from high school right to the professional ranks, and he's won twice already. You talk about a guy who has the potential to be a major, major star on the PGA Tour and in major championships. I'm not expecting anything this week, but the way he's going, he's trending in the right direction.
Yeah, my good friend Bob Joyce, who lives in your neck of the woods down in Florida, maybe 10 years ago, he was out at PGA National, and Akshay was out there hitting golf balls. And Bob's been one of the great teachers for a long, long time. Saw something in him, and he said automatically, wow, this kid has that it factor. He was hitting it so far, so straight, and willing to work hard. Those observations certainly paid off for Bob Joyce and Akshay at San Antonio. And now on Thursday, first round of the Masters, and he's going to be there.
Yeah, and I'll tell you who's been there as well. Nelly Korda, fourth straight win on the LPGA Tour, Bob. No one's hotter in golf right now, right? I mean, Scheffler was not able to get that third straight win, and we certainly like his chances this week. But Nelly Korda is the dominant player in all of golf right now with her win in the match play over the weekend.
Yeah, four wins in a row on the LPGA Tour. Absolutely mind-boggling. And she still has a chance for that fifth one. So we'll have to wait and see.
Okay, let's talk Masters a little bit more, Bob. I have a memory I want to pass along in just a minute. I think you'll enjoy. How about from you? You've been in that media center many a time. You know the golf course well. Give our listeners a great Masters story that matters to you.
Well, I'm going to try and condense them because there's three that stick out of my mind, and they're so completely different from one another that it's mind-boggling. The first one is early on, I was attending it, and a part of my crew was Graham Agors, a longtime radio broadcaster from Australia. And they had a system back then that the first 25 media members on Saturday morning that signed up got to play on Monday. So I said to Graham, I'm going to go sign up and play on Monday. He said, well, if you want to accomplish that, here's what you got to do. You got to get to the gate at midnight the night before and get your car in line. And when they open that gate, you drive that car as fast as you can down to where registration is. And I remember it was dusty. It was early in the morning, and it looked like we were in a NASCAR race. Boom, get down there. I think I was third in line, signed up, and I got to play that Monday. Second story that incredible is one of the main institutions in Augusta is the Waffle House. A tradition to go there. And I got up early one morning, and we had a van. And I drove down to the Waffle House, and it was an incline where the parking spot was. So I slipped into the incline. My foot slipped off the brake, hit the gas, and van jumped the drainage ditch that was there. So I had two wheels on the one side of the ditch, two wheels on the other side of the ditch, and that automatically made everybody in the Waffle House, they came out, they were taking cameras, taking pictures, and I'm like beside myself, what are we going to do? That was one of the toughest phone calls I ever had to make to our executive producer, Janice Self. She was still sleeping, and I said, Janice, you got to come help me. She said, what happened? I said, I put the van over a drainage ditch at the Waffle House. She didn't believe me, but she showed up. We got a tow truck, and on we went. And then, of course, the one that really sticks out, my first opportunity ever in 86 to talk to Jack Nicklaus in person. And I was basically down at the Masters getting lead-up information for the United States Open coming to Shinnecock, next door to where I live, for the first time in 100 years. I waited on Thursday. There weren't nearly the number of media. But then I see Jack available. I walk over. I say, Mr. Nicklaus, do you have a minute? He says, what do you need? I says, I'd like to get your thoughts on the U.S. Open coming to Shinnecock. He says, U.S. Open? I'm here to win the Masters. What are you talking about, U.S. Open? I said, thank you, Jack. And I walked away with my head between my knees. But it ultimately led to a great friendship because that coming Sunday, he did win. And I was the first person to interview him on his way to Butler Cabin. And Jack has been a dear, dear friend for a lot of years. As I mentioned previously, I was able to get a handwritten birthday card from Jack and Barbara Nicklaus, which I cherish beyond anything. And this is a good opportunity to how good the Nicklaus family is. Tom Watson is on Golf Channel, and he was talking about Turnberry when he had that chance to win for the sixth time and got in that playoff with Stewart Cink. I was there. I was friends with Tom. We talked every day. I was about 10 feet away from where that shot landed in regulation. He just hit a hard spot, went over the green, a foot either way, he probably would have won. So he said he was very dejected, got back to the hotel room, changing for dinner when the phone rings, and it's Barbara Nicholas, and she says, "Tom, Jack wants to speak to you." And Jack gets on the phone. "Tom, you know, you hit that shot on that 72nd hole, just missed by a foot. If you would have won, but you're a great champion, and hold your head up high." That's the Jack Nicklaus that very few people don't know, but that's a prime example, gracious winner. But he was also a very gracious loser and very supportive of good play by anybody on the PGA Tour.
Lovely story. And won't it be great again at, 8 a.m. Thursday to see Jack and Tom and Gary, and the tradition starts again with the ceremonial drives at number one. And of course, everybody will be there, you know, and I'm sure some of the players. If I was if I'm Denny McCarthy, for example, and I have a later tee time that day, I sure as heck am going to be on that first tee to soak that in. Even if I have to get up a little bit earlier, that's history. That's what makes it beyond special, is the Masters keeps traditions alive, Bob, in a time when sometimes we tend to be so fast and we want things quickly. It's great to hear those special voices. You know, we're going to talk about Vern Lundquist in a minute. With my dad, Max Elbin, who was a past president of the PGA of America, Bob, I want to say my dad was on the rules committee at the Masters for about 25 years. And the first Masters I ever attended, he said something to me, which I always remembered. He said, "Kelly," he said, the Augusta National Golf Club, without it actually being so, it was the precursor to the stadium golf course, like you'd see it at TPC Sawgrass. I said, "Well, what do you mean?" He said, "Well, it's not everywhere." He said, "But number 12 is a classic example." He said, "If you stand behind number 12 tee, you watch players hit their approach shot on 11. You watch them tee off the great par 3 12th. You watch them hit their drive and second shot into 13. If you sit on the bank below the 6th tee, the par 3, which a lot of people do, you watch them play and hit into number 6. You look to the right, you watch the players hit into 16. You can watch them tee off at 17. So Augusta National's always catered to its patrons. It's always mattered to them. You mentioned earlier about fair prices. You certainly see it at the concessions. Let's talk just for a second about, again, I mentioned about voices earlier. Wow, this will be Vern Lundquist's 40th and final Masters. And he's called two of the greatest shots in the history of golf there. You remember the one, obviously, in 2005, Tiger's chip in at 16. And that he's been the mainstay there for a long time. But let's relive for a second the great call by Vern with Jack's putt in 1986 at number 17 that pretty much put the Masters away.
Jack Nicklaus has looked over this birdie opportunity from about 18 feet. This is for sole possession of the lead. Maybe. Yes, sir!
Yes, sir! Bob, it's those voices. It's that history. Another reason why we love Augusta National, right? And the Masters.
I still get goosebumps when I hear Vern. Congratulations, Vern, on an outstanding career at Augusta. And getting back to that opening ceremony tee shot, there'll be about 20 players, 20 to 25 players that will make it down there for that 8 o'clock ceremony. I get a kick out of Gary Player because he'll be on the range for about an hour hitting balls, loosening up to go hit that one drive. But that's Gary Player.
Doing jumping jacks, stretching, everything. Whereas Jack just gets to the first tee and has a funny line or two and hits the shot and then goes back, right?
That's absolutely correct. But it's sure great to see him do that. And, you know, Tiger was asked, in the future, would he ever consider being an honorary starter? He said, absolutely not. But I know from experience, time kind of changes things, and a pretty good possibility.
So let's talk about Tiger for a second. He is right now, he's made 23 consecutive cuts at the Masters. He's tied with Fred Couples and Gary Player for that remarkable feat. So obviously, if he makes the cut this week, he claims the all-time honors and cuts consecutive cuts made. And he was asked earlier today, as we make this on Tuesday of Masters Week, he was asked earlier today, what drives him at this point of his career?
I love golf. I do. I've always loved it. I played other sports growing up, but I just have always loved this sport, and I love to compete and be able to have the love I have for the game and the love for competition be intertwined. I think that's one of the reasons why I've had a successful career. I just love doing the work. I love logging the time in, and I love preparing. I love competing, and I love that feeling when everything's on fire with a chance to win, and you either do or you don't.
You know what came out of that press conference that I found very interesting? Only two players over the last 25 years were not in the top 10 after the first 18 holes and went on to win a green jacket. Tiger did it twice. He's the only player. And I thought very interesting, he was asked about the possibility of being a Ryder Cup captain when the next Ryder Cup comes to Bethpage. And Tiger, which totally surprised me, responded by saying, I'm going to meet with Seth Waugh next week, and
there
we're
going to
talk about it. I mean, I thought that was a big revelation. Can you imagine New York, Tiger Woods, and the U.S. team trying to get that Ryder Cup back? It'll set all kinds of records, that's for sure.
It all makes sense to me. And the PGA of America likes to keep it closed when it comes to the selection process for its Ryder Cup captain. But in this case, even if they have to wait a little bit longer than they normally would in the cycle, that's a pretty good barometer right there of what's likely to happen. All right, let's real quick, some picks, Bob. Let me go first, if I may. I've got three guys who come to mind. Scottie Scheffler, for obvious reasons, number one ranked player in the world. He's as hot as anybody in the PGA Tour. He's a past Masters champion. Brooks Koepka tied for second last year behind John Rahm. I just feel like there's some unfinished business with him, but I haven't really watched a lot of LIV golf, so I don't know where he stands right now. But I'll tell you the guy I think is going to win this week, and that's Hideki Matsuyama. Obviously, you know, having won the Masters in 21, you look at his last four starts. He won the Genesis. He tied for 12th at Mr. Palmer's event. He tied for 6th at the Players, and he tied for 7th last week at Valero. And I think everything points to Hideki Matsuyama winning a second green jacket come Sunday.
Well, I'm going to go with two picks, completely different from anybody you selected. Mm-hmm. I really like the chances of Wyndham Clark, our United States U.S. Open champion. And believe it or not, Rory McIlroy. I think he's, done enough preparation. I like his putting stroke now. I like the fact that he took time out to go get a visit with Butch Harmon. He's doing everything right, and his game is too good. He's too talented. A couple of breaks go his way, and we will have a sixth winner of the Grand Slam. Rory McIlroy, long overdue. This is his 10th attempt at trying to complete that Grand Slam, but I think he might get it done this week.
Yeah, and I like Clark as well. He would become the first, if it were to happen. Fuzzy Zeller was the only first-timer competing in the Masters to win, and it would be Clark's first Master. But Wyndham, he likes tough golf courses. Good picks there. I like this. Larry Mize, Bob, he was not expected to win in 1987. That was the year that Greg Norman in 86 and 87, so many shots that took championships away from Greg Norman. But Larry Mize, you talk about a guy whose one shot has stood the test of time and really has defined him. Great gentleman, and one of the truly, truly seminal moments in golf history with one golf shot.
No doubt about that. And You know, you said Larry Myers wasn't expected to win the 87 Masters. How about after 72 holes? He wasn't expected to win. He's in a playoff with Greg Norman and Seve Ballesteros and Larry Mize. And lo and behold, the good guy, the real good guy in Larry Mize. We had so much fun with him on Musings. We appreciated his time. The only Augusta native ever to win the Masters. He's been a gentleman. He's been an ambassador. And he's going to make for some great listening for all of our loyal listeners on Musings on Golf. And we thank each and every one of you every week for coming to the show, because without you, Kelly and I'd be out on the street corner trying to collect some nickels.
Well said, Mr. Pupka. And you will hear that interview with 87 Masters champion Larry Mize right after these commercials. Like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry, and you should too. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deer skin and calf skin. They've got a soft gel insert, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And I got to tell you, they are so incredibly comfortable. So head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best, play your best with William & Harry. Celebrating its 30th year, the South Florida PGA Golf Pass offers the ultimate summer golf experience with special access to more than 100 private, semi-private, and public golf facilities. From May 1st through October 31st, Golf Pass members can enjoy special low rates, exclusive member-only outings, special offers, and more. For just $60, you can purchase the South Florida PGA Golf Pass and instantly gain access to all these great benefits through the member-only app. It's simple. Pay, download, play. Visit sfpgagolf.com/golfpass for more information. That's sfpgagolf.com/golfpass. Bob, our special guest today, produced one of the greatest moments in the glorious history of the Masters Tournament. And in the process, he became the only player born in Augusta, Georgia, to put on the famed green jacket. 37 years later, he remains the lone hometown winner of the Masters, and we are absolutely thrilled to welcome him to Musings on Golf. Larry Mize, how are you?
I'm good, Kelly. Thanks. It's great to be with you and Bob. Thanks for having me.
You know, Larry, I keep track of Masters winners, not on the talent on the golf course, but how they conduct themselves as gentlemen and ambassadors for the game. Of all the Masters champions, I have you in a neck-and-neck race with none other than Ben Crenshaw, and I don't think you mind being in that company.
Well, you're very kind. That is good company to be in. I'm flattered to be in that company, no doubt.
You know, it's been quite a while since you, well, what is it now, 37 years since you won? But you get to go to the Champions Dinner, and all listeners, we'd love to hear from you on what does that night mean to you? And do you have a regular spot that you sit in? Do you walk into Champions Dinner and there's a name tag that says Larry Mize, or you get to pick and choose where you want to sit?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, number one, it's a special night. It's a night that I look forward to. Every time comes around January 1st, I start thinking about the Masters and getting to go back every year. And this will be the first year not playing, but get to go back to the Champions Dinner, play the part three. It's just so special. And that dinner is just a wonderful time to be with my fellow champions. And, you know, I've been able to be there with some great champions going back to Henry Pickard, Herman Kaiser, Claude Harmon, all the way down to the great players today. So it's just been incredible. You know, Gene Sarazen and Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, just phenomenal. But there are no name tags. It's open seating. You go where you want. But it's kind of like church. Everybody kind of goes back to their same spot. I sit at the end next to Crenshaw. You know, he emcees it. He's at the end with the defending champion next to him, and then the chairman, Fred Ridley, next to him. And I'm at the edge right next to Ben and Langer. Bernhard and I are good friends. He sits next to me, and Zach Johnson's next to him. And, you know, Jack's over there and Tom Watson. And it's a great evening and so special. I can't wait to go this year.
You know, being from Augusta, you certainly have to have a unique perspective on the Masters. When was the first one you actually attended?
You know, Bob, I think it was, you know, we moved, I was born and raised there, and we moved away for a little bit, came back in 67. I was 9 years old. So it would have been 9 or 10 years old. You know, back then tickets were a lot easier to come by. My dad was able to get tickets, and I'd go out there and get autographs. And I remember getting some tees of some of the players. Lionel Hebert had his name engraved in the tees, and I'd get tees and collect them, get autographs. So I was about 9 or 10 years old when I first went out there.
Well, little did you know. From collecting tees to collecting a green jacket.
Yeah, you're right. Unbelievable.
Larry, I know you worked the scoreboard on the third hole for a number of years. How did that opportunity come to be? And do you have a memorable moment or two that stand out from what has to be really cool times during, I think, what, your high school years?
Yeah, it was before high school. You had to be a teenager to work there. So I was 13 and 14 when I worked there. And I think my dad, he knew some members there. So I can't help, I'll have to ask him for sure, but I think my dad had to help, you know, get me there, I guess, to get the job. So that was, I was very happy because a 13-year-old kid, I was in hog heaven, you know, going out there, got to go to the Masters for free. I got my little lunch ticket. I got free lunch out there. You know, I was loving it. You know, I was there in 72 when Jack won and 73 when Tommy Aaron. One of the things I remember, if I've got it right, I think Sunday got rained out in 73 when Tommy Aaron won and they had to come back to El Monday. And I remember Bobby Nichols was one of the early groups coming through. And for some reason, this, you know, 14-year-old kid, I had the headphones on and they were talking to me what was going on. So I was kind of, I don't know if I was in charge, but I had the headphones on. They had let me know what's going on. Then play's been suspended. So I remember that. And the other things I remember, just the fun of putting up the numbers, and then, you know, we wouldn't want to be a distraction to players, but, you know, you pull back the little slot and you put the number there. We pull back the slot and peek through and see what was going on the golf course. And, but it was just, fun times. I have great memories of doing that.
Hey, we had Stuart Hagestad on our show last week. Obviously he's going to be playing in his third Masters as the mid-am champ. He mentioned number three, and I asked him, what do you hit off the tee? And he immediately said, where's the flagstick? Where's the pin? And I said, okay, if it's back right, he said, I hit driver. I said, if it's front left, he said, I think he said I hit 4-iron or 3-iron. How do you approach that hole? Because it can be such a devilish hole because of the green, right?
It really is. I mean, it is one of the great short holes in golf, in my opinion. And the guys, you know, hit it so far now with the equipment and how well they work out. Driver is a possibility for a lot of these guys, but it sure wasn't for me. I never could get it. I didn't want to get up there close to that green. I would always lay back, hitting some kind of fairway wood. Maybe when I was younger, I might have been a long iron to lay back to give me I wanted a full shot in there with either an 8, a 9, or a pitching wedge to give me a shot where I could really spin it and stop it on the green, because, you know, the right side of the green is pretty deep, but the left side is very thin, just a thin finger. So, you know, you always are careful on that pin to the left. I would always play it to the right a little bit. Hopefully the slope would take it down. I'd just be pin high right and very makeable putt for birdie, but I was always very careful on that hole to put it in the fairway and give me a full shot to spin it into that green.
Hey, Larry, 11 obviously stands out for a great reason to be a hole that you'll always remember. But do you have is 11 a favorite hole? It's obviously an extremely challenging hole, but is there a hole or two that stand out as favorites for you at Augusta National?
Yeah, you know, and I know it may sound crazy. 11 is a very special hole in my mind. I mean, it was obviously a pivotal hole in my win. Not only did I birdie to the playoff, but I made a really good par-saving putt in regulation on Sunday. So, but my favorite hole out there is 13. I just think it's a wonderful par 5 and a beautiful with the dogwoods and azaleas on that hillside. The setting for the hole is just phenomenal. So that would be my favorite hole out there, number 13, the par 5.
We're joined by Augusta native and 1987 Masters champion Larry Mize. Hey, Larry, I saw or read that your dad got you started in the game. Is that right? You mentioned something about even pitching shots in your backyard. Was your dad the one who introduced you to the great game of golf?
He really was. You know, my dad, he didn't play golf when I was born. I was the youngest of three, but he started playing when he was about 35 and became a one handicap, became a really good player. And we had a U-shaped driveway with a walkway from there going up the front door. And we would get in the front yard and chip it over the walkway and see who could get it close to it without hitting it. So we would have a lot of fun there. And then, believe it or not, I can't believe they let me do this. I would hit wedges over the house from the front yard to the backyard. And thank goodness I never broke any windows. But I don't know if I'd have let my boys do that, but somehow they let me do it. So it was a lot of fun.
And it had to sharpen your short game, right? You were doing that a lot.
Well, I think so. You know, I was never a long hitter, so I knew I had to have a good short game from day one. So I was always working on that.
Hey, your middle name is Hogan, Larry Hogan Mize. Were you named after Ben?
No, I'm not. It's a family name. My great grandmother, her married last name was Hogan. She was a Bentley who married a Hogan, and like I said, nobody played golf when I was born, so it's just a family name that I got when I was born. Yeah, it's kind of an amazing coincidence.
Larry, you played collegiately at Georgia Tech. I know you're very proud of your school. When did you begin to realize, growing up and in high school, that you might have the ability, the game, to play, to get a scholarship at the collegiate level?
You know, Kelly, that's a good question. Probably not until I got the scholarship. I mean, I was a good player, I guess, but I was player. Nobody was recruiting me. You know, no Georgia Tech's the only one that offered me a scholarship. So probably not until that time when I got offered that scholarship, I realized that. I mean, I always had the dream to play. I wanted to play college golf, but bigger, more than that, I had the dream to play professional golf on the PGA Tour. But I probably didn't know for sure I had it until I got the opportunity.
And Larry was very different, obviously, back then, in terms of you didn't have the American Junior Golf Association. You didn't have those kind of events. You had mostly local events, I would imagine, where you proved yourself at the local level, the state level. But did you ever travel outside of Georgia as a high school kid to play in any events?
You know, I really didn't. I was a kind of a homebody kid. I didn't. I was shy. And the only thing I remember going out of state for, I remember I played the Future Masters one time. I went down and played that one time. I played in some local, Georgia PGA junior tournaments. And I did get to play in the Georgia. I might have been older, but I played in the Georgia South Carolina matches one time. We had some matches there, one state against the other. But I really didn't travel around, which probably was a mistake. It would have been better to travel around, get some experience and some exposure and play in some bigger tournaments. But I never did that. I kind of stayed local.
Well, we're really to be joined by 1987 Masters champion Larry Mize. Thanks for coming on Musings on Golf. And when I think back 87, that means you not only won the Masters, but you had the green jacket put on your shoulders by none other than Jack Nicklaus.
Yeah, Bob, that was just, I guess you say, icing on the cake. You know, Jack was my favorite golfer growing up, and to have him put the jacket on me, I couldn't have had anybody better put it on me, and it really meant a lot. And matter of fact, I was telling him that last year after the dinner how much it meant to me for him to put the jacket on me, and it was just added to a wonderful, special week for me that year.
I contend, and I make strong arguments against anybody that wants to argue with me, your shot on 11 to win the Masters is the single greatest shot hit in the history of golf.
Oh, well, Bob, you're very kind. I leave that to y'all to decide that. I was fortunate enough to hit it and knock it in, but I appreciate that comment. I stay away from that. I let everybody else choose that. I'm just glad it went in. I know that much.
Hey, Larry, what was running through your mind? So you're on the 10th tee, that first hole of sudden death. You've got Seve, you've got Greg Norman. What's running through your mind at that point? And I'm wondering, emotionally, being a kid from Augusta, were you caught up in any of that, or did you just simply had to be laser focused on the task ahead?
Well, you know, I really was focused that week. I remember my caddy, Scott Steele, he was telling people, hey, he might have told my wife, Bonnie, this one time, hey, he's focused. I'm not going to bother him right now. I'm waiting below, and he's really zoned in. And obviously, you have to be zoned in at Augusta to play with well. And so I was very zoned in. And, you know, I have a lot of respect for those guys' games, but I'd played with them before. You know, Greg and I had been in a playoff at Kemper the previous year. Seve and I played together many times. So I knew them and respected their game. But you know, that's what you want. You look forward to going against the best players, and they were 1 and 2 or something like that in the world. But, you know, I came in with a lot of confidence. I played well all week. I birdied the 72nd hole. I birdied 18 coming in, which really gave me some momentum going to the playoffs. So I was excited. I had excited nerves. You know, I think that I had the butterflies, but I think they were flying in formation. I was excited, and you know, I liked my chances. You know, Greg did beat me at Kemper, but we went six holes, and I believed I could hang with him.
Can I ask you, what was the make and model of the sand wedge that you hit on that 11th hole?
Yeah, Bob, it was a McGregor sand wedge. It was a Jack Nicklaus Muirfield McGregor sand wedge. And interesting part about that is I'd played with one, and it was getting worn out. And the tournament I played before the Masters, the last tournament, was the Players' Championship. And with all the ups and downs at Players, I didn't want to take that sand wedge out of play that week. So I played with it that week. And then I put my backup, identical wedge, my backup in play at Augusta that year, the Jack Nicklaus Muirfield sand wedge. And that's the club I chipped in with first week with it, and I chipped in to win the Masters.
Boy, oh boy. You know, the more you dig into these stories, the better they get, the more heartwarming they are. And certainly the opportunity to talk to a Masters champion like Larry Mize is extremely heartwarming. Do you still have that wedge?
No, you know, the Masters send you a letter after you win that they would like a club that was instrumental in your victory. And they say, we understand you like your club, so we're willing to, you know, wait to get it. And back then, I used a sand wedge for probably a year or so before I, you know, wore the grooves out. And now I try and change it a little more often now. I've learned I need to change it more. So after I used it and got the grooves, then I sent it to them, and it's displayed with the other Masters champions clubs at the Augusta National Golf in the clubhouse.
Larry, can you kind of maybe walk us through that 11th hole? Obviously, Seve missed a putt on 10 that eliminated him from the playoff. Well, I don't really remember, to tell you the truth. What was your drive like there? Your second shot? I know Norman was just on the fringe with his approach. Where did you hit your drive? And what happened on the second shot?
Right. Yeah. We both hit good drives. You know, Norman outdrove me probably 20 yards or so, like he normally does. So he's up there. I think he's hitting like an 8-iron. I'm back there hitting a 5-iron in there. And the pin's kind of 2/3 of the way back on the left by the pond. And I play right to left. That's my shot. So I'm trying to draw one in there. But unfortunately, you know, I got a little ahead of it. That body outran those arms, and I hung it out to the right. So I missed it to the green. I was probably about 100 feet from the hole, probably had, you know, 50 feet of you know, the rye grass, and then about 50 feet of green. That's something like pretty close to that. And Norman, like you said, was just off the green, because I remember he couldn't mark his ball. He was in the fringe,
right?
Either on the fringe or just off. So that's where I hit it over there. Now I had to, which, you know, made me feel, once he hit it on the fringe, it made me feel a little better, because I was really disgusted with my second shot. But once he hit it on the fringe, I felt like, well, now I could hit a good pitch and run, a good shot, and put it up there close to the hole, put the pressure back on Greg.
Did you pick a spot on that pitch shot to say, gosh, I need to land it here, whether it was off the green or on the green, to get it, you know, within a reasonable distance from the cup?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the best way to play your short game. You need to pick a spot where you want to land it. And one of the best things about that shot was there was only one shot that I could play, in my opinion. And, you know, the worst thing in golf you can do is be indecisive, not sure what you're going to do, and you don't really commit to it. Well, I couldn't land it on the green. The greens were way too hard and fast that year, because, you know, we were only 3 under par. It played really tough that year.
Yeah.
So I had to hit short, and I was far enough back. If I used like an 8-iron, it would be too hot coming through there. So I used that Nicklaus sand wedge and played a little pitch and run, and I picked a spot short of the green. I said, if I can land it there, bump it up there, which is a shot that we practice at Augusta, because a lot of times you can't get under the ball like you want with that rye grass. So I picked a spot and thought, if I hit it here, I should be able to put it back close to the hole and give me a shot. And thank goodness I hit the spot and hit bounced a couple of times. It got on the green and rolled real nice to the hole.
Yeah. When did you realize, hey man, this could go in?
That's a good question. And I always felt like I wish the camera was on the other side to see my eyes getting bigger and bigger as I got close to the hole.
Wow.
But I don't know. I was just, you know, if you watch the video, I mean, I'm frozen there. I hit the pitch and I don't move. I'm just watching it. And it kept my interest all the way to the hole. And I don't think I knew it. I wasn't counting my chickens before they're hatched. I waited until it hit the pin and went in the hole. And then I threw the club up in the air and went running around screaming like a madman.
What a segue that is. When I'm thinking here, you went from having your hands on a Jack Nicklaus sandwich to having Jack Nicklaus's hands on your shoulders putting on the green jacket.
I mean, that's pretty good, Bob. I never thought about that before. That's pretty good.
Yeah, well, that's my job. That's my. I couldn't work for Kelly. You come up with stuff like that.
You do good work, Bob. No doubt. Hey, Larry, go ahead, Bob. Go ahead.
127 majors I've covered.
Wow, that's a great record there. That's awesome.
Because I love golf. That's all.
Go ahead, Larry. You can tell.
Yeah. Larry, you mentioned a little bit ago about the playoff with Norman at Congressional, the 86 Kemper. That was a 6-hole playoff. Greg beat you. What do you remember from that playoff? Unusually long. That was just two players, right? Just head to head, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just the two of us. And, number one, it was very disappointing. You know, I would have loved to have won that tournament. And I'd came in second the previous year. And then, of course, here I am coming in second again. One thing I remember, we started on 16, which is a good par 3, 190 or 200 yards. And I'd made par, and Greg had about a 12 or 15 footer for par. So I kind of liked my chances. I didn't expect him to miss it, but I thought, well, maybe I could win it here. But he had a really good putt. You know, Greg, he had to make it. So he jams one, hits the back of the cup, jumps up, you know, pops up a little bit and goes in, made a great putt for par. And then we just had a good playoff for 5 more holes. And then I hit a 4-shot on 18. I think I hit it over the green into the water on the 6th playoff hole, the 18th hole, and lost the playoff there. So very disappointing, but it was, giving me some great experience to play in that playoff. And think of it as my first playoff and to play with Greg. And I was, probably did me good down the road.
Good, Kelly. Find out who Larry wants to play with.
I'm interested. Before that, what did Greg say to you after the pitch in, after he missed that putt in 87? Well, obviously he was devastated. What did he say?
You know, he just congratulated me. You know, there's not much to say here. He was very professional about it. He congratulated me and shook my hand. And I remember the next week at Hilton Head, we were in the locker room together, and I went up to him and said, Greg, hey, you handled that like a champion. I just was congratulating him on how well he handled the tough situation. So, but just congratulated me and was a gracious in defeat.
Yeah, two more questions for me, and then I'll be quiet and let Bob take over. But I'm wondering, Larry, we've mentioned about 37 years. What's it been like for you to have been known for such a long period of time for one incredible shot and really one life-changing moment? It's not something that everyone gets to have, for goodness sakes.
I guess first thing, there are worse ways to be remembered, I guess. That's the first thing I think about. But it's been very flattering for people to, continue to still talk to me and ask me about it. That's great. Hopefully I'm remembered for other things as well. But if that's what I'm remembered for, like I said, there are worse things to be remembered for, and I'm very fortunate and blessed to have won that great golf tournament.
How else would you like to be remembered in terms of golf and the type of person you are?
Well, as far as golf goes, I'd like to be remembered that I was a professional and handled myself properly on the golf course and treated people the right way. And then off the golf course, my Christian faith is very important to me. So as a good Christian man that was a good husband and father and now grandfather. So I'd like to be remembered that I was positive influence for Christianity.
Well, that's great. Final question for me. We asked this of all of our guests. If you could have a dream foursome, Larry, three people to play a round of golf with, whether they're living or deceased, who would those three be? And I'm kind of guessing where you would play that round of golf, but I won't be presumptuous on that.
Well, it's a good question. My dream foursome would be my three boys, David, Patrick, and Robert, and we played together. So since we played, I'll go to the dream foursome that's not living would be Ben Hogan, Bobby Jones, and the third was really tough, but I'll go with Gene Sarazen, the Squire. I'll go with Gene Sarazen. I would love to play with them and pick their brains and talk to them about what golf was like back then, and it'd be fun to play with those three gentlemen.
I'm going to wrap things up here, Larry. And from my entire career broadcasting golf tournaments, which I consider very fortunate to even be in that position, I had a little bit different system. I admired and praised what professional golfers were able to do on the golf course, but I put equal importance as they fulfilled the role of ambassadors for the sport. And I thought that was equally as important as being able to play the game well. And you certainly demonstrated you could play well. You have a master's jacket, but you also have been an outstanding ambassador, and I'm sure motivated a lot of young people to go in the right direction. And I'm glad to hear you and be so thankful for your faith.
Well, Bob, that means a lot coming from you. I really appreciate that comment. Thank you very much.
Hey, Larry, I am wondering, I know Bob was interested as well. How many times have you watched that shot? I mean, is that a ritual in the Mize household to say, honey, wait, can I turn that on one more time, make sure it goes in again?
You know, how many times? I've not watched it enough. I know that much. I should have, if I look back, I should have watched it and soaked it in. And just, I did enjoy it, don't get me wrong, but I, as you get older, you realize I probably should have enjoyed it even more than I did. You know, you realize that moments like that don't come along very often. And so I've seen it a lot, but I should have watched it more. And that's what I would say. I don't know how many times, but not enough.
Was that hard for you to say goodbye as a contestant last year?
Yeah, it was very emotional. It was. I mean, it was an emotional week, and coming down play a Saturday morning, I had to come back Saturday morning to play, and some buddies texted me, hey, you made it to the weekend. There you go. But it was emotional those last couple of holes. Actually, the whole back nine on Friday afternoon and then Saturday morning, it was very emotional. It was not easy to play. And so it was a tough time, but my family was there, and it was great to share it with them. And it was time, but it still was time. Yeah.
Yeah, we can't thank you enough, Larry Mize. 1987 Masters champion. We appreciate your time here on Musings on Golf. You've been an outstanding guest and once again, an outstanding ambassador for the sport of golf. Thanks, Larry.
Well, Bob, thank you. It's great to be with you. Y'all have a great rest of your day. Thank you.
The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X are designed to outperform. Created in Titleist R&D laboratories, manufactured in Titleist golf ball plants, and then validated by the best players in the world. These golf balls are longer and more consistent with unrivaled control. Outperform with the new Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X.
Introducing the epitome of golfing elegance and performance from William & Harry. Immerse yourself in style and unparalleled comfort as you step onto the green with William & Harry's unique durable deerskin and calfskin masterpiece. Unrivaled in its water-resistant design, the WH shoe, which is also available in private label, ensures that you stay focused on your swing even in unpredictable weather conditions. Elevate your game to where luxury meets peak performance. Step into excellence. Step into innovation at williamandharry.com.
Well, we can't thank Larry enough, Kelly. Just absolutely outstanding. We also can't thank William and Harry enough. That golf shoe that is a proud sponsor of our show, it's the ultimate in luxury. And it sounds strange to talk luxury, talk golf shoe. But I know two things. And I've talked to people that have experience wearing the William and Harry. They get a lot of compliments, and they play a little bit better golf. They're very comfortable. They're very stylish. You want to improve your game? Give William and Harry golf shoes a chance, and I guarantee you, you'll be sending me a little thank you note.
Yeah, I love them as well. Comfortable, great performance. And when you visit williamandharry.com, select your shoes and be sure to put in the code KECHARITY and the number 10. That's KECHARITY 10. Thanks so much to Larry Mize for his time, his thoughts, and what the Masters means to him and what he means to the Masters. Next week, a gentleman who will be in the booth this week. Frank Nobilo from CBS Sports will be joining us for recapping the 2024 Masters. Enjoy the tradition unlike any other. My buddy Bob Bupka, the master himself. I'm Kelly Elbin, signing off on Musings on Golf.